Well, hey guys, what's going on? Brendan Vermeyer here, your favorite AFD&T director. Starting the call a few minutes late. I apologize for that. I think trying to figure out who my co-host today is. Hey, 858, are you there?
Hey, Brendan, how are you?
Good, how are you doing?
Good, it's Brandy.
I thought so. I didn't realize Brandon wasn't on today, so that was my bad. But we're here.
We can rock the show. I think it'll be good.
I think so. You know, gosh, I'm slapping myself. It's one of those, I'm always used to being the co-host, and then I call in, I'm like, why isn't anybody starting the show? What's going on? And then I log in as the host. I'm like, oh, because Brandon's not here. Anyway, sorry about that, guys. But today is Friday, August 9th, Friday call time. Happy Friday. I hope everybody had a great week. So Brandy's going to be my awesome co-host for the day. We're going to do some Ask the Mentor questions. It'll be a good time. And a lot of you guys listening in. So we've been getting a lot of good live questions lately. I hope we continue that streak today because it's always a little bit more fun than just, talking amongst ourselves and answering questions off Facebook and stuff. But anywho, a few announcements that we should probably tackle before we dive in with some Ask the Mentors goodness. So certainly if you guys haven't seen, hopefully you have, but we've got the AFD&P Facebook Live, AFD&P newsletter, our normal newsletter that goes out to everybody. But obviously kind of the big thing that we announced just this past week was our speaker list for the FDN conference. So if you guys haven't seen it, be sure to check it out. It's an amazing lineup. So many amazing speakers. And Brandy just posted about it again today with another link because it looked like some people were having a hard time buying their tickets or something, Brandy.
Yeah, the code wasn't working, so we decided to extend the sale, the flash sale, until Sunday.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, awesome. And I think it was like $75 off with the flash sale.
Yep, absolutely. $75 off, and that's on just conference ticket, or if you want to buy a conference ticket with the dinner, you can apply it to that one as well.
Perfect. Super, super cool. So, guys, be sure to grab those tickets, check it out. I literally could not be more excited about this conference, and it's rapidly approaching too. It's August 9th. We're literally, 11 weeks out or so. It's going to be here before you know it, especially with how quickly this year's gone by. So be sure to grab those tickets. It's going to be an amazing event. I can't wait to see you all there. Last year was a blast. And aside from the speakers and the lectures and the exhibitors and all the amazing stuff there's going to be, one of the best parts is just hanging out with your FDN family. I feel like we are all so tight-knit, especially, an AFD&P group. We've got a really kind of tight bond, tight community going on. So hope to see you guys there. Let's see, what other announcements should we make? Be sure to cast your vote. We just posted in the, well, Jen posted in all of the Facebook groups yesterday regarding the OAT workshop after the conference. So that would be Sunday afternoon after the conference ends. We're basically wanting to see if you guys would like me to do a 4-hour organic acid kind of intensive workshop there. Certainly, I'd love to do it. I hope you all can make it happen. We're kind of ironing out the details, but first and foremost, we want to see what you guys are interested in. So be sure to cast your vote on that. Yes, I'm totally in, or no, can't quite swing it because it would cost a little bit extra. But let us know. We're certainly trying to give you guys the best offering possible with that. So be sure to cast your vote. Brandy, any other major announcements we should probably tackle right now?
No, I don't think so. We do want to kind of maybe remind people, anybody who watched that webinar with Kendra on HTMA, she extended an offer to FDNs, and that offer actually ends on Monday. So if you guys haven't had a chance
Good
to
call.
watch that replay, it's linked in the newsletter, and all the information is there about her course. So if you guys are interested, definitely take a look at it because her offer ends on Monday.
Yeah, that should be a really awesome course that she's doing. She's teaching it live, which I think is pretty cool. You know, most courses are kind of a, you know, evergreen. You chip away at your own time with the online modules. But I think it's kind of cool. She's doing her course more of a live instructional thing and doing Facebook and all that good stuff. So be sure to check that out. And, of course, she will be at the conference and talking more about business stuff. You know, we want to make sure we have a good rounded offering of more science and clinical topics at the conference, but then also plenty of business. So Kendra being, you know, skilled in both, she's going to be presenting about business, but be sure to check out the HTMA because, as Brandy said, it'll end on, or the offer will close on Monday. Cool. Okay. I think that's about it for announcements for this week. I mean, there's plenty of other things we could rattle off. Like, I do want to make sure you guys all saw that Reed Davis came on the Pro Series this week for staying within our scope of practice as FDN practitioners. The attendance wasn't quite as high as I kind of was hoping for, considering how much activity there was surrounding the topic. So, you know, certainly I understand if you guys can't listen in live, but be sure to check out the archive or, you know, when there's further questions about that kind of stuff, we're going to point you straight to the webinar recording because that was a pretty good, pretty valuable webinar, and he went into a lot of just different ways that we can make sure we're able to keep doing what we do as FDN practitioners. So be sure to check that out.
Yep, it's up live on FDN Connect for everybody to view now. So if everybody wants to check it out, just log into FDN Connect and it's right there for you.
Perfect. Perfect, perfect. Well, cool. So let's get into some Q&A, guys. Ask the mentors. It's always a lot of fun to do here. Brandy and I can kind of tackle any questions you guys have. So keep in mind, you can hit 1 to raise your hand, and I can bring you on live, unmute you, get some live dialogue. Those are always most fun. I see a lot of you out there, so don't be shy. But otherwise, we'll get rolling with some questions that we have stored up already. So I actually think I want to start with one that I was just kind of conversing about and answering in the AFDNP group the other day. See if I can find it here. So I'll just read kind of the statement and then kind of give some thoughts behind it. And it's a little bit more more of like a theoretical question. So the AFDNP member writes, "I'm coming to my tribe for help. I have a potential client with a fifth autoimmune disorder. I've never heard of this. Can someone enlighten on this issue? She also has Raynaud's, Sjogren's, celiac, dairy intolerance, fibromyalgia, Hashimoto's, arthritis, osteopenia. I'm looking at food sensitivity testing, GI MAP 101, and IP test. Any other suggestions? Thanks." So, you know, that's quite the thing. And the way that I actually answered, let me read my initial answer and we'll kind of think about this as a group here. So my response to that, which, you know, is a pretty specific question, any other suggestions on testing, right? With, you know, a host of all sorts of autoimmune and you know, healing opportunities and dysfunction that this client obviously has. So my answer to that was, do what you feel comfortable doing. Don't worry about what you don't know. Run the tests that you feel confident interpreting. Identify hidden stressors. Coach up function. Don't overthink it or feel like it's your responsibility to fix all of her many problems. So, you know, with these kind of questions, I know as FDN practitioners, we're super passionate about this stuff. We want to be able to help our clients with everything. We want to be the last person they ever need and bring it all together. I totally get that. I totally get that. But the thing is, the deeper you get into this stuff, guys, the more you realize nobody knows everything, and there's a lot more that we as an entire industry don't know than what we do know. And I'm not saying that we can't have a major impact on, you know, any client with any condition they might be coming to us with. But the point being, we can't allow ourselves to kind of take on that responsibility of, it's my duty to fix them. It's my duty and responsibility to fix all the problems that this person has. You know, she's got multiple autoimmune conditions and all these intolerances and fibro and, you know, all these things that she rattled off. But here's the thing, guys. It doesn't matter what they're coming to you with. It really doesn't. We're going to do what we're going to do. I'm not saying it's not an individualized process. It absolutely is. You know, what tests are we going to run? Well, it kind of depends on what the issues are and what we're trying to look into. But, you know, I think sort of the logical or theoretical quote-unquote problem, I don't want to say problem, but you guys kind of know what I mean when I say that. But the problem with that question is this individual is kind of getting caught up in chasing the condition, you know, chasing the symptoms, chasing the health complaints. Well, what labs should I run? Well, you should run the labs that you have training on. You should run the labs that are going to identify healing opportunities, and you know how to use. So the question is, what information do you need as an FDN practitioner to be able to help move the needle on this person's health? And be able to coach up function, identify those healing opportunities. You know, I would never recommend somebody run labs that you don't feel comfortable with, you know. I don't think there's anything wrong with running labs that you're not, like, super sound on. That's the point of the medical director program. I've been, you know, telling everybody, yeah, run an O-test. I'll help you make sense of it when we do a medical director consult. So my point being, don't get overwhelmed or intimidated or feel like it's your responsibility to have all the answers for the, you know, hundreds of symptoms that they might have or the 10 conditions or whatever. That's not your job. You're not supposed to have all the answers. You're supposed to do what you're trained to do, which is run some testing, identify those healing opportunities, and start coaching them on what they can do to heal themselves. So, anyways, I'm kind of blabbering, but I don't know, just I see questions like this sometimes, and it's like, well, what were you trained to do, you know, because it doesn't really matter. So I'm going to kind of cut myself off there, because now I'm just rambling, but Brandy, what are your thoughts on that, and any additional comments you might have with kind of a scenario like that?
Yeah, I love everything you said, and I think, like you said, we have a tendency to, you know, we have a client that comes to us, and they have all these quote-unquote diseases, and we're like, oh, no, like, now what do I do? And we forget what we were trained to do. And it's not about the disease. It's not about the diagnosis. It's do what we do. I mean, my initial impression, I don't know anything about this client, but they have all of these diagnosed diseases. My bet would be that the basics with that person are not in place. Are they sleeping? Are they at stress release? You know, are they moving? Like, what are they eating? I mean, these are all very simple things that we're trained to help our clients with. Start there. Don't get overwhelmed and into the weeds and I need to run all these 5,000 tests or, you know, like, start with the basics, like you said. Do the tests that you're comfortable doing. You're going to get information. Work dress with the client. And, I mean, I'm going to take my FDN hat off for just a second, but hearing this particular client, my thought is, what's going on with their mindset? What emotional things are going on? Like, that's another piece, I think, a lot of times with autoimmunity that people, you know, don't remember to dig into. There's a big connection between emotions and trauma and autoimmune diseases. And so, I mean, if that's not your wheelhouse, if you aren't comfortable with dealing with those things, you can at least talk with your client, get them to feel comfortable with you, dig in, find out, do they have past traumas? Do they have, you know, a lot of stress and stuff like that that's going on? And then refer out to somebody that can help them with that while you help them with all of the other lifestyle things. So rather than just overcomplicating it and getting freaked out by the diagnosis, like you said, Brendan, do what we do. Do what you're trained to do. Take a breath. Take a step back. Start at the beginning and go, you know, one step at a time. And, you know, you might run into roadblocks, and that's normal, and that's what we're here for. But just don't get overwhelmed with the long list of symptoms and diagnosis that your client comes to you, because we're going to do the same thing every time.
Mm-hmm. Very well said. Yeah, very, that was good, concise, well-rounded, kind of zooming out, because, you know, certainly there's kind of the two sides of it, the theoretical big picture versus more kind of the technical, because sure, you know, guys, I totally get it. There's kind of a confusion where, you know, you go through the initial FDN training, and what labs are you trained on? Well, the basic five, you know, the foundational five, whatever you want to call them. And then you graduate, and all of a sudden you have access to, what, like 80 tests that we have in the medical director program? I totally get it. But, you know, again, that's where all these tests that we have access to, they're just tools. You know, when do you need your screwdriver? When do you need your hammer? Well, do you actually know how to use that table saw that you have access to, but, you know, are you prepared to turn that beast of a machine on? You know what I mean? So, you know, sure, with, a multiple autoimmune case from more of like the technical, you know, clinical evidence side, okay, well, yeah, like Cyrex Array 5 might be a good consideration to see all the antibodies against different tissues or whatever. But I don't even really want to go too much into the technical side, because that's not the answer to the question. You know, if you have the training and the knowledge and the comfortability to, you know, do maybe like a more in-depth type of investigation, hey, good for you. You know, that's great. But that's not really what this question is demonstrating or postulating here. It's more, as Brandy's saying, it's more like, well, we need to be thinking about, it's not about the labs, is really the punchline. This is not a question about labs. It's a question about, this person's really messed up. How do we help them? Well, we start with the foundation. And that's where I always, no matter who the client is, and what they come to me with, because believe me, I get some weird inquiries, you know, especially from Michael's website that I'm listed on. I get some weird people, well, I don't want to say weird, but you know what I mean, some very, oh, Brendan, like, I have all these genetic things and sulfation issues, and it's just like, but do you, or is it that maybe you haven't mastered the fundamentals, and you're really stressed out, and you're scaring yourself with all this paralysis by analysis research. And so again, like the labs sometimes can create this fear and this, you know, over analysis and over complicating what's probably a simple thing. So even regardless of the labs that you run on this person, this client, this lady we're talking about, whoever it is, let's start with the mindset. Let's start with the lifestyle, you know, see how far that gets us. And then, of course, with the labs, identify, we'll run the labs that you're comfortable with. So anyways, talk about that all day, but we're probably good on that one.
Yeah, I think it's a good answer. I mean, we've all been there. We've all gotten freaked out with somebody who comes with all these things, and we try to overdo it, and then we realize, I should have stuck with the basics, because that's what they needed. It happens to all of us.
It sure does. It sure does. I have to remind myself of this stuff too sometimes, of, you know, you get so caught up in the weeds and chasing things on labs, and like, well, I gave them a supplement for this, so why did it not get better on the retest? And it's like, well, what are they doing besides popping the pills? That's always the thing. 9 times out of 10, they're not taking the right supplements or whatever. It's, you know, it's the big picture. It's the mindset. It's the lifestyle. So always start there, guys. Cool. All right. Any live questions yet? Anybody brave enough to raise their hand by punching one and asking a live question? Or if you have a comment, you know, because I, you know, we're all here to learn together. Not like Brandy and I are the dictators telling y'all what's up. We're just leading the way a little bit, but I always like everybody's input. So no hands raised. That's fine for now. Let's pull another question here. This is a good one, especially since we've got Brandy with us today. So question reads, hashtag clinic. Anyone here well-versed in considerations during the breastfeeding? I'm not. Mom was pumped with antibiotics during pregnancy due to recurrent UTIs. Baby is 7 months old and breastfeeding. Suggestions for safe options to heal mom's gut and the baby's biome. Brandy, I'll let you take the first stab since you're a mom and that's more, and just that type of demographics probably a little bit more up your alley than mine.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm always conservative with somebody who's breastfeeding because whatever we do with them, you know, if you give them supplements or something like that, it could go through the breast milk. So you always want to think about that. But having said that, I mean, I experienced 2 C-sections and antibiotics and problems with microbiome with 2 of my kids. So I've been there. And really, I mean, the best thing you could do is just, again, focus on what they can do with lifestyle. And that's going to be hard with a 7-month-old baby. I mean, hopefully at this point they're sleeping through the night, so mom's getting good sleep. That's going to be really important. And I would also focus on diet. So, you know, making sure that they're not eating inflammatory foods. They're getting plenty of probiotics, things like maybe kombucha and sauerkraut and stuff like that. You could probably, I would say, safely add in something like Megaspore, bone broth, collagen. I mean, those are all really easy things that you can add in lifestyle-wise. And I think are pretty safe if somebody is breastfeeding. In terms of the baby, I mean, you could also opt to add in an infant probiotic. So I have used Megaspore with my kids. I just open up the capsule and I use like a tiny amount. So, you know, you could use a little bit of that, or there are some other ones on the market that are specifically for infants. I'm trying to remember the name. It's a powdered one. And Brendan, if you remember, jump in. But it's, I can't think of the name. There's a powdered infant one that's a really good quality infant probiotic that you could use. Mm. And I think just starting with that is a good way to do it. The other thing that I would also look at would be careful with the baby when you're introducing solids. So, you know, there's a lot of talk out there where we want to start our babies on baby cereal as their first food, but that could be really aggravating to the gut with babies. And I found with my kids it was. And so the standard recommendation of rice cereal or oat cereal or stuff like that, I don't think it's necessary. You know, look for the best quality foods you can when you are introducing foods for baby. Nutrient-dense foods, healing foods. I mean, you can give babies bone broth, so maybe that's one of the first things you introduce besides breast milk. There's a lot of different resources out there about that. I think one of my favorite ones would be Wellness Mama. She's got a lot of information about breastfeeding and introducing foods, so that might be a good place to get a little bit more research and resources that you can share with your client.
Mm-hmm. Very good, very good. Yeah, you know, with any time you've got, you know, pregnancy or post-pregnancy and breastfeeding, it's just, you know, it's just kind of a touchy topic and everything. And so this is where, like, the reality of the situation, guys, is there's going to be a lot of nasty stuff that's being transferred through the placenta during pregnancy or transferred through the breast milk, you know, after birth and all of that, postpartum. There's just because we all have a lot of nasty stuff, whether it's, you know, lipopolysaccharides and xenobiotics and, like, guys, there's a lot of, part of it is I think we overthink it a little bit just because we are more aware than the average person because we know more about this stuff. And so to a degree, it kind of is what it is. But with that being said, again, we kind of back up and it's like, well, number one, make sure that you know, the client understands your role and what your role is not, and obviously understanding, like, if you have any concerns, you know, pass it by your doctor. Because here's, it's not our responsibility, nor do we want it to be our responsibility, you know, to be responsible for the safety of their life or their well-being. You know what I mean? It's the doctor's job to, like, keep them alive and make sure that nothing is going to, you know, heal them over. It's our job to guide them back to optimal health. You know what I mean? So you have to make sure you have the ground rules kind of set, but then you can honestly communicate. So if I was talking to somebody that's breastfeeding, I'd let them know, like, well, I don't know that I would want to be doing any, you know, heavy metal detox or, like, intentionally trying to, you know, really do a detox protocol while breastfeeding. But, you know, if there is, like, an infection or something, you know, I mean, you've got to do what you've got to do to you know, heal the mom if there is an infection. So I like a lot of Brandy's considerations and suggestions. It's not like we're ever going to be able to have just perfectly squeaky clean breast milk all the time. There's always going to be junk. But let's just be mindful of, you know, are we rattling the cage? Are we stirring things up a little bit? Are we starting to kind of mobilize more toxins than maybe we want to do during that phase of, you know, the child's development and everything? So just kind of think critically that way. Explain options to the mom and, you know, let her decide what resonates of, oh, well, maybe it's something simple, just like a little bit of a probiotic for both of them or the baby or whatnot, or, you know, just make the recommendations and let the mom decide what she's comfortable with. But again, I would lean on the side of caution and probably keep a lot of these things a little bit more kind of basic, prebiotics, probiotics, nourishing gut formulations, but not doing anything that's starting to really, again, kind of stir up the detox process that might then, you know, pass through the breast milk. So just a few thoughts there. Dashboard here. Live questions yet, guys? We've got about 28 minutes left in the call. Again, hit one to raise your hand. I'd love to talk to one of you. All right, let me pull a Brandy, do you have any questions? I'm scanning real quick to pull any off Facebook here.
I don't. But hey, while I'm on here, if any of you guys, you know, want to ask me MDP questions or anything like that, it's your opportunity. So definitely take advantage of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, since we talked to that first question that we addressed, okay. Looks like I need to answer that on Facebook anyways. So this is another question that I think kind of sort of piggybacks off the first one we did. So I'll just read it real quick. I'm learning about labs outside of the FDN5, such as oat, Dutch, GI map, by watching the training videos. But it seems these should replace the original five versus being add-ons, ? A little bit of a grammatical thing there. I'm transitioning back to FDN after a couple years off to do more college, so any input on the newest info and recommendations is appreciated. I don't think I need to be as long-winded about this one, but it's kind of the same sort of little bit of a logical gap, you know, that's not the way that we operate as FDNs. It's not about this lab is better than that lab. It doesn't work that way. There isn't really any lab that's better or worse, you know, and I think sometimes too, we always have to remember that the lab industry, it's a free market. You know, I don't think we really think of it that way, but, like, we are customers of the laboratory industry. And the thing about lab testing is there is no perfect test. They are all these imperfect snapshots in time. Some of the labs, they have an amazing track record for a long time, like BioHealth. Other labs are kind of newer, and they're the new kids on the block. And, you know, some labs have a wealth of research and evidence and third-party verification. Others don't. So my point being, we as, you know, the practitioners, the FDNs, et cetera, you know, we have to learn how to become good consumers. And then, as we were saying before, it's not about what lab you're running. It's about, you know, your ability to help this client master the fundamentals of a healthy lifestyle, identify key hidden stressors. So, again, this question is kind of similar where there's a little bit of a, I don't know, kind of a misunderstanding of what we do with FDN of, oh, well, so should these kind of newer labs that everybody seems to be talking about, OAT, Dutch, GIMAP, HTMA, oh, should those, you know, should we be running those and should we replace the FDN 5? And, well, no. No, again, that's not what it's about. It's, you know, what labs do you need? What labs are going to give you and your skill set the knowledge or the information and data that's going to help you enhance the program that you're coaching your client through. So yeah, again, it's not that, you know, Dutch replaces 205, GIMAP replaces 401H. It's just options. It's options for data. Is that data that you're getting from those tests helping you help that person? I think that's something that we always forget about is, and let me just put it very concisely and then I'll be done. Getting more information and making the investigation more complex does not always equal better results. In fact, there's really not a connection between more data and better results. It's your skill set and ability as the FDN coach, the FDN practitioner, to help guide them towards where they want to be. You know, sometimes these other labs might provide further insight that you do maybe need to overcome some of those hidden stressors and healing opportunities and kind of metabolic obstacles. But again, it's 90% of what we do is more about the major pillars of DRESS. It's only, you know, that 10%. The labs are like 10% of the equation. You know what I mean? So when it comes down to like, okay, yeah, maybe that organic acid might give you that 10% that you really need, but generally, that's not really the thing. So, yeah, I'll stop there.
Yeah, and I the only thing I think I would add to that, I would just say, like, if you haven't been doing FDN for a few years, get back into it and get comfortable with doing what you know. So work with a few clients. Use the labs that you were trained on and that you're comfortable with. Pick up your confidence. I mean, with each client that you work with, you're going to build your confidence to work with them. You're going to see their successes. And then once you feel really comfortable with what you're doing, I mean, that's when you maybe would be like, well, maybe this time instead of the 401H, I want to run the GIMAP. That might be a good time to do that. I mean, you don't want to do that right off the bat if it's something you don't know or you haven't run before and you're rusty and you really haven't been working with clients. Get comfortable with working with clients first, gain some confidence, and then once you're kind of on a roll with those clients, if you want to start exploring some of the other tests, that might be a good time to do it.
Mm-hmm. Good. I like that. Yep. Get back to your realm of comfortability and, you know, if you've been taking a while off, you know, get back in the groove rather than kind of shaking it up. You know, refamiliarize yourself with, you know, kind of dust off the rust and dust and whatever. Get back in the swing of things before, you know, switching it up to new stuff that you haven't used before and you're not, you know, experienced with. And I totally get it. I mean, I'm always doing that. It's like I stick with what I know and stick with my wheelhouse, but maybe I'm starting to include something that's a little bit new. You know, like HTMA, for example. Like, I'm definitely no slouch when it comes to it, but I'm not the wizard that Kendra is or anything. So, you know, do I run it? Sure. And I feel comfortable enough. But the point being, it's a part of something that I am very familiar with, all my normal stuff. So, but again, guys, this is obviously why we have the medical director program is, you know, you guys can get that extra help or detective hour, you know what I mean? So be sure you guys utilize that. All right. check the dashboard. I'm kind of scrolling back and forth, guys. Oh, look, we've got a couple hands raised. Snap, crackle, pop. Okay, 775, I'm about to unmute you. Do-do-do-do-do, wait for it. Okay, 775, what's your name and what's your question?
Hi, this is Deanna, and I just have a supplement question, and I can't even remember where I exactly read about people who are sensitive to oxalates recommend or not having vitamin C. Like vitamin C aggravates the problem, or is it a different? Can we do a different type of vitamin C, or what do you know on that?
Yeah, well, good to hear from you. Great question. First live question of the day, so thank you. Oxalates, vitamin C. Well, I'm going to have to slap myself and check the biochemistry later, but yeah, there is some sort of biochemical pathway where sometimes vitamin C can kind of biochemically contribute to excess oxalic acid. I've got to say, though, I never see that to be the problem. Most people need more vitamin C. And, you know, do I think somebody that does have, like, serious oxalate or oxalic acid or glycolic, you know, overload, maybe we need to be cognizant of the vitamin C until we, you know, get it under control or whatever. But if I kind of zoom out with the oxalate stuff, generally oxalate issues are more going to be fungal driven, I would say. What I tend to see is when they have excess. So let me put it this way: Candida can indirectly produce oxalic acid. There is a pathway where Candida can contribute to excess oxalate production, and then mold, like Aspergillus or Penicillium or whatever, mold can actually directly produce oxalic acid. So I would say, like, the majority of the time, the oxalate issues are really more of a fungal issue, and when you address the fungus, usually over time the oxalate issues will, you know, kind of come down. Certainly, I think doing, like, a low oxalate diet, or using, you know, calcium and magnesium citrate to kind of bind and neutralize some of the oxalic acid that they might be consuming can be advantageous. But, I mean, it's good to be mindful of the vitamin C, but generally I don't think that's going to be the problem.
Okay, and what's your go-to mold if somebody... I mean, I have a gentleman who pretty much ate mold for a long time. I mean, he didn't. He thought it was natural. He ate mold on yogurt, on cheese, on food, and has more rapid onset of dementia recently. Pretty sure that mold is a contributing factor. Possibly parasites of that too. So parasites first, then mold, or mold?
Yeah, good question. Well, so if I know that the person has had mold exposure, like you know, I mean, I think we all know by now I run organic acids on everybody, but if I know that they have mold exposure, whether they ate it, you know, or they had it in the environment or whatever, I'm immediately going to go ahead and run a mycotoxin with it. Because here's the thing is, like, organic acids is going to tell you if there's mold colonization, particularly Fusarium, Aspergillus, and Penicillium. But either way, there's so many different types of mold that, you know, I think doing the mycotoxin test is going to be, because with mold, there's, okay, number one, exposure. Number two, colonization. Has the mold colonized their body? And then number three, mycotoxicosis. You know, do they actually have mycotoxin accumulation and sequestering in their tissues and all of that. So if you know that they have mold exposure, I just go ahead and do an organic acid with a mycotox. Now, as far as like parasites first or mold first, it doesn't necessarily matter or work that way. It's more like what's the primary culprit, because for one thing, mycotoxins are highly immunosuppressive, so anytime they do have mycotoxicosis and mold issues, it quite literally like opens the door for other infections or other bugs to kind of proliferate and all of that. So in those kind of situations,
like H. pylori?
Yeah, H. pylori, C. diff, you know, parasites, you name it, just about anything.
Because this guy also has H. pylori.
So I definitely want to, you know, address that. And one thing I'll mention too, like with the stool testing that we all do, we have to keep in mind that there's a difference between, like, we all have bugs in us all the time. You know, we have more bacterial cells than we have human cells. You know, having bugs in us, on us, that's part of being human. The question is that bug causing a problem to their health? You know, so something I'd like to throw out there is I think our community gets a little bit too caught up on chasing bugs that show up on the GI map. And the thing is that, like, never ends. You know, you run a test, oh, well, now this bug showed up, and now this bug showed up. And then we're just chasing bugs forever and ever, all the while. Well, are they symptomatic? Do they actually even have any, like, white blood cell imbalances? So that's where, you know, I do blood chemistry with every round of testing that I do. Because, I mean, if they're not symptomatic and we have a beautiful white blood cell profile, well, even if there is a bug showing up on the GI map, am I necessarily going to go after it? I don't know. Maybe not. But I would definitely probably do some of the mold testing on that dude, because especially with the neurological diseases and kind of early onset stuff or whatever. Yeah.
He's having signs of GI bleed, so he's losing RBCs and hematocrit, and hemoglobin is trending down. He is going in for an upper GI next week, but he's had it in a year ago. So, you know, the thing on my heel is going, choosing, you know, I feel like I'm being pushed into going into the medical model of the triple therapy with the antibiotics with this guy. He did do some natural H. pylori treatments and stuff, and got his hematocrit and all the blood count stuff came up, was looking better, and then it's gone back down. His color looked pale. We got it tested again, and then was trending back the other way. So, so I feel like we just play catch up after we do the antibiotic route, rather than trying to mess further with, you know, he's doing well with his diet. And he has caregivers that we are managing. He kind of shifted to a low oxalate, but paleo slash a little bit of keto. He got his cholesterol also low.
I do see a lot of low cholesterol.
I haven't gotten a recent cholesterol, but it was very low a year ago.
Okay. Yeah. Well, certainly mold and H. pylori can, you know, kind of play into low cholesterol. So definitely, you know, make sure he's got the proper medical oversight, but you keep doing what you know how to do with, help him through getting his gut cleaned up and get his gut to a better place. Really doing all the things to help heal that, but might be worth kind of looking into the mold stuff, though, too, if there is historical evidence of consumption and stuff.
So after, if we start the antibiotic therapy recommendation on supplements along with that, do we just totally back off totally for 2 weeks, for the 2 week antibiotic protocol? Which ones do you feel are important to stay in? And can we do the Megaspore late at night after? Because, you know, it's a 4-time-a-day treatment with the antibiotics. So there's not a lot of space in between. So what are the recommendations on that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, we can certainly make suggestions and they can decide what they want to do and what resonates with them. I will say sometimes when they're actively, like, dealing with and meeting with a medical doctor, I tend to be a little bit more hands-off of, like, hey, you know, go do what your doctor is telling you to do. And once you're, quote-unquote, like, medically stable, then why don't we, you know, follow things up with, yeah. Because I get what you mean. It's like, I don't know, when he's doing all these antibiotics, is it really worth trying to, you know, layer in all of these other things? It can kind of get overwhelming and it gets a little bit messy. So there's not really a right or wrong, but I personally would kind of just be like, hey, all right, go do your antibiotics. You know, be supervised by your doctor, you know, one variable at a time. Once you're kind of done with that and feeling stable, like, let's do some gut healing after that. Because what I always educate people about in those types of situations where they're going to the doctor and getting a antifungal, antibiotic, or whatever, you know, I let them know that, like, hey, these things don't do anything to heal your body. All it's really doing is killing something that might be hurting your body, but that's not the same as directly healing. It's kind of indirectly healing by, you know, potentially removing an offender. So I let them know, like, okay, go get that treatment, and then when you're ready for more the healing, like, that's where we need to follow it up with the lifestyle and supportive supplements and all of that. So I don't know if that's helpful, but.
Yeah, but, I mean, we want to keep up on doing the B vitamins and the D.
Sure.
You know, what is that mineral? It's so important. Magnesium.
Yeah, that one.
Keep going with all of that, right?
Yeah.
And all their,
yeah, why not?
Going there, and with, I know you guys use the microbiome things, like, I mean, it wouldn't hurt to do the prebiotic powder and the mega mucosa, or is that going to be a waste?
I don't think it would be a waste at all. Like, if somebody was on antibiotics, and if I was kind of eager, like, let's get a jump on the healing, even with the antibiotics, you know, would I mess around with, like, antimicrobials? I'd probably wait till after the antibiotics. But, yeah, things like the mega mucosa, mega IgG, some prebiotics, or even just, you know, if we're talking beyond microbiome, of your DGL, your slippery elm, your marshmallow root, your, you know, all that good stuff. You know, the supportive, right, the things that are more supportive and nourishing to the gut while these atomic bombs that are antibiotics are being dropped in there.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was kind of
cool
where I was leaning. So, but yeah, that makes sense how that pushes people into the oxalate problem, and then the oxalate problems are aggravating the neurology for the dementia issue. There's a connection with that and autism. As well as the dementia stuff. So it's, mm-hmm. that's that's a great thing to be aware of, that mycotoxins underneath should be a driving force of that oxalate problem that drives the neurologic changes, as well as the molds and stuff having direct issues on the neurology. So thank you for that feedback.
Yeah,
and then the
course.
Other one,
yeah.
On mold and supplements, what about, like, they promote lion's mane, you know, and mushrooms for cognitive issues, but if you suspect or you know there's mold toxicity, are those medicinal mushrooms, should those be not included, or are they not in that same mold realm?
Yeah, I'll answer that, and then we're going to start wrapping up. With, you know, mold and then thinking about using other fungi, there's not really a whole lot of consensus out there. I think some of the different medicinal mushrooms, aka fungi, I think they can still kind of be used potentially, but you know, for one thing, I'm not like a mushroom supplement expert by any means. I know people that, you know, are pretty into that kind of stuff. I think it should be used cautiously, though, because, yeah, I mean, fungi, and how are they, I don't know, interacting or competing? I know different mushroom supplements have a lot of kind of immune modulating properties and stuff, but if I'm dealing with a fungal, you know, infection, fungal colonization, I'm probably not really going to mess around with other fungi supplements, because it just kind of gets messier than I really want to deal with. I want to work on the microbial balance of the body, get their microbe situation under control, get the detox situation under control, rather than, you know, using, I don't know, sometimes like herbs and fungi, there's a lot of properties that we might not be aware of. So I'd rather, you know, it's like, well, let me kind of kill off the bugs and microbes that are overgrown, work on some detox rather than, you know, throwing in these other things that, well, maybe it's going to modulate the immune system in a favorable way. It's almost like too unpredictable for what I would feel comfortable with. But great question. Great conversation there. Thanks so much for calling in. We've got just a couple minutes left in the show, guys. So I'm actually going to check in with Brandy because I've been talking for like 15 minutes straight. So Brandy, whew, how are you?
Good. I wanted to, before we sign off, I don't want us to forget the graduate that we had this week. So I want to make sure we give them a shout out. Yeah. So we had, and I'm going to apologize if I don't say the last name correctly, but we had Gracia Miguelieta from, she's actually in Mexico right now. She graduated this week. She's super excited to get going and get working. So good job, Gracia, for getting through the course and making it this far. And you'll get to join Brendan and I over in ASDNP now.
Woohoo! Let me give a little round of applause. You know, I like that. That's actually, you know, I feel bad I forgot to read off graduates at the beginning, but not a bad way to end the call, though. Got another amazing FDN practitioner out in the world doing good. Can't wait to see you in the AFDNP. And I see there were two or three more of you that had your hands raised. I'm sorry we didn't have time to get to you today. Feel free to throw those questions on Facebook, or you can email them in, and we can save them for our next Ask the Mentors call. Because I'm eager to have those convos with you all and help any way we can. But that's about all the time we have for today. So, Brandy, thanks so much for hanging out with me today.
Yeah, of course. It was fun.
Always is. Good time. So, everybody, have an amazing weekend. You know, keep doing the amazing work. We're doing a lot of good stuff as a community. And, you know, the future's never looked brighter for our FDN tribe. So, Have a beautiful weekend. Can't wait to see you guys at the conference, but we will talk again next week, and we'll be back next Friday. Thanks, guys.
Bye, everyone.